Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson, and we're talking about how to assess the feasibility of a product at concept stage.
At concept stage. And it's, I got a question this morning via email from Tessa, who's is a student in Singapore, and is in a, it wasn't clear to me what a year 11 student is, but I'm not sure if that's what US would consider high school or if that's an 11th year student in grad school. My daughter's, I think, getting close to 11 years in grad school, but
that'll be story. High school.
Yeah, high school. But they apparently the project was, she was reaching out to ask, they have a product concept and they wanted to get an idea if it's even feasible in its concept. And I wrote back and I said, you know, good luck with your project. I'm not an expert in product development and marketing and feasibility and, you know, all the aspects that go into whether a product is feasible or not. You can make anything. Whether anybody will buy it is a completely different story, if that's what you mean by feasible. Could the product actually work? Again, that's an engineering challenge and given all the factors of it, but so the product, she gave us a quick outline of it, was it's a portable wearable device designed to provide continuous mosquito protection by detecting nearby mosquitoes through an acoustic detection technology, sensing the frequency and rhythm of the mosquito wing beats, which can be differentiated from other environmental sounds. Cool. And she didn't say AI, but neural networks is the underlying technology they're doing for the sound analysis. And this is high school. They're doing a spectral analysis within an 80 centimeter range. Mosquitoes don't stand a chance with people like this out in the world. And then when the mosquito is detected, the device alerts the user, who then can manually activate a attached spray mechanism containing mosquito repellent. And in my house, you'd be doused in this stuff. You'd be soaking wet in the evenings. So there's a lot of mosquitoes. But anyway, it was, I latched on to the, a portable wearable device. And I'm thinking of the just generic use cases. You're out for a walk in the woods, or you're next to the lake, or you're having dinner on the deck, or, you know, at a restaurant. And there's mosquitoes around that this device would detect and alert you to. Without getting into the technology part, I would really start thinking about all the environmental and use conditions and factors that you also need to design to, because handheld devices or portable devices get abused a lot by all kinds of factors: temperature, UV, drops, people stepping on it, you know, all just dust, debris, suntan lotion, on and on and on. So that was my advice to her. You know, I'm not sure if it's feasible or not. I'm not the right person for that. But it's, are you thinking about all of the factors that make it practical?
Well, I think there's a few different things that make something feasible. And I'm working with a client right now where we're talking about, is it feasible to have this new technology mm-hmm. involved in this extant device that is created? It's pretty cool. Actually, it's beyond cool, really cool. And they're after a yes, no answer. And I'm going, well, we can get to a yes, no answer about whether it is possible for someone in the world to be able to make the swap and make it work. The second part is, can you do it? Because what is feasible for example, SpaceX is not feasible for a startup in Seattle. That's just got five rocket scientists who said, you know what, let's give this a crack ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so one of the issues I have with feasibility studies is that it seems to be very organization agnostic. It's going, yeah, you can do this, you can have this technology will work, so on and so forth. But is it feasible for the organization? Now, of course, feasibility studies, which are organization agnostic, are okay if you're trying to pitch to, you know, an angel investor or something like that who's not trying to buy your ability to produce them. They're trying to buy the idea you came up with and then with the investment find the right people to produce them. But, and of course, that's okay to be organization agnostic. But then if it's about a feasibility study for your own organization, you can't, it doesn't matter if you pay a consultant a lot of money to do a feasibility study generically. If you can't do it, it's not feasible.
Yeah. Yeah, I think feasibility has so many variants of its definition. It really depends on the scope. You know, because my first thought was, is it technically feasible? My first thought was battery life. If you got that much sensor computational power going on, just to sort out, oh, here's incoming, you know, mosquito coming at you. I'm wondering how big the battery pack would have to be, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing. And I've seen studies like that where we put in 2 AA batteries or 3. And if we do 3, that changes the industrial design. It's bigger and more clumsy and it's heavier and all this other stuff. And so one of the electrical engineers sits down and figures out power consumption budget and how much they expect it to burn through those batteries, how quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it could be scoped to, you know, are we doing 2 or 3 batteries because we need it to last for 4 hours or whatever the time frame is. And then how much lithium do we need to put in here to cover that expenditure of power? And the other end of it is on marketing. Would anybody wear one of these things? You know, is it cool? Is it all those kind of factors that go into it? And I, if it's purely technical, I'd say make a mock-up of it or a breadboard or a proof of concept and just see if you can detect a mosquito or not. Then, you know, it's feasible. You can do it from the just sorting out the acoustics signatures. Anybody that's been asleep in a room with a mosquito somewhere in the room at night or trying to be asleep knows that they do have a unique sound. There's no doubt about it. But the idea is that the scope of what question you're trying to answer is it technically possible? Is it, will it meet a person's need on an ongoing basis possible? I'm thinking of battery consumption. You know, it spans a wide range. And so I didn't get into it with her to what's the narrowing it down.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know how to make one of these things, maybe I'll get, you know, let me know, I'll put you in touch with her so you can get in early on this new concept.
All right. So there's a few things. I mean, we're jumping all over the place. So I think first thing is it technically feasible? And a case study or example which springs to mind is Theranos, where what's her name? Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah.
In spite of her professors saying, hey, you can't do this, said, you know what? Off I go. Convinced lots of people to throw millions her way to make it happen. So that's an example of something not being technically feasible, but off you go anyway. So that's the first thing. Is it technically feasible? Second thing is, what can your organization do? And if you're trying to pitch the idea to an angel investor, then you don't have an organization, that's fine. But what can your organization, with your tooling, with your design engineers, your design house, with your network, what can you guys do? That's another consideration. I think you talked about the some sort of more practical considerations, which are battery life, the torture that people put handheld devices through, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which go slightly beyond sort of a simple review of technology. This goes to the ability for it to be used by the common person. There's plenty of mobile phone companies which make great products from one perspective, but quickly stopped working when the first early adopters started carrying the mobile phones around the way we did. We do now, I should say.
Yeah, putting it on dashboards or, you know, throwing, you know, packing a snowball with it.
Yep.
Kinds of stuff like that.
They learned very quickly that, yeah, that's there's some stuff going on in that space that you can't easily predict. And the companies which did a really good job of making rugged stuff did very well, at least for that point in time. Nokia mm-hmm. springs to mind.
Yeah.
So there's just the ability to understand the use case. And of course, it sounds very specific to times of day. So will people be using this the whole day? I don't know. Lots of little ones and twos, but battery life, ruggedness, waterproofness, all this stuff that you need to consider for a wearable portable device. That's another piece. For me, it sounds like it's possible, that piece.
Yeah.
It just needs to be considered.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've used this story a number of times. I got called into a product that was already designed and launched and failed horrendously because it was a wrist fitness band type thing, no longer in the market, and the company is gone. But it was just a wrist device that would measure heart rate and other medical-ish, you know, health-type stuff, number of steps, stuff like that. I think it was mostly a step tracker was its primary feature, and it did a couple other things. And they had a plug in it so that you could power it up. You take it off at night, plug it in, and then or plug it into your computer to upload or download information that it was containing. And they didn't make the plug waterproof. Yet in their advertising, it was advertised as you can wear it swimming to track your health in some parameters that it would track while you're swimming or taking a shower. You put it on in the morning, wear it all day, power it up, download the data in the evening, and that's all you got to do. Well, once it got exposed to moisture, it only took it 7 days on average for it to fail completely. Washing your hands or taking a shower or going swimming would all do that. And they were dumbfounded because they found a standard for wristwatches for water resistance. And they should have paused. These were all very smart people with creating these devices or the electronics and the mechanical systems and the molding process they use and all kinds of cool stuff. But they didn't second guess the standard that says dip it in 3 feet of water, take it out, shake it off, and see if it's still working. Then your water resistance to 3 feet or 1 meter. And just a simple understanding of how water affects electronics will lead you to that. Well, it takes time for that to occur, for that corrosion to grow sufficient enough that it will cause a short or an open or critical failure in your electronics. They didn't think that through, and they shipped 70,000 units and 50,000 failed in the first week. And so it's like, yeah, you got to think through stuff like that. It's how is it used? What's the day in the life of these things? The marketing people are creating all kinds of use cases, but if you haven't designed it, the capability for that, then your product's really not feasible. It might be great in every other aspect, but if you didn't think through how it fails, and it also goes into my C rants in previous episodes about standards. But the idea is that, yeah, feasible is it possible, but is it work in the real world is a different question.
That sounds like the product you're talking about was feasible, though.
Oh, yeah. No,
it was the execution that.
Yeah. If you paid it, if you never got it wet, it would work just fine.
Well, not even that. It's just feasible in that you and I both know you can design waterproof plugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's of itself is possible. So they just didn't do it. It's the execution on what could have been a very feasible and profitable product.
Yep. Yeah. And I don't know where I wasn't involved at all with where they were making the decision or what connector to use and how and everything else. Yet it's like, and if I was there, would I have caught it? I don't know. I probably, because especially when you see the first ad where they're swimming in it with it, like, that's usually not good for electronics. Let's take a look at this connector a little closer. The rest of it was soft molding over the top of the whole thing. So they thought they had it sealed, but they missed a spot. That's kind of thing. But anyway, it was an interesting question. You can take a look at this feasibility, and she's got drawings and all kinds of other stuff.
Nice.
I thought I have to see if the link's still active anymore. There's a product called the pomegranate phone. I think it's called
pomegranate. Yeah.
You know this one. And it's a phone, right? And then now there's actually universal translator. So that part came true. But it also had a harmonica feature. You'd slide a lever open, and the whole case now was a harmonica. It was a screen projector and stuff like that. It was a marketing team that just went off the rails of creating it. What all can we shove into this one smartphone chassis? But at some point, you start to wonder, is this real or not? What is this thing? And it was a really slick, you know, advertisement for this new product. And they're like, there's something up here. And they let you in at the end of it, that it was merely marketing to get you to go to, was it British Columbia? No. It's more on the east end of Canada.
Yeah, Nova Scotia or something.
Nova Scotia. Yeah, it was like that. Creative people there.
Absolutely. It was well done.
It was well done. But at some point you go, I don't think so. My favorite feature was that it was a coffee maker. Yeah, a little nozzle that would extend out, and it had little wings. You could set it on a glass of water, like a mug of water, and it would suck up the water, brew the coffee, and put it back in your cup. I don't know where the coffee grounds came from, but that battery life of a water heater that did that would be amazing. But
now that was super cool, that one that you're talking about.
Yeah. So look for the pomegranate, Nova Scotia. I think it's still online somewhere. Brilliant done. But I think we've talked about it a couple of ways, is that the question about feasibility of a product design is you got to define the scope. You know, is it possible for you? Is it possible for somebody in the world? Is it technically possible? Is it variations of that? Is it practical? Will it survive a day in the customer's hands, you know, in different environments where mosquitoes exist, which is, as far as I know, just about everywhere. I mean, if you're in Alaska, from what I understand, the mosquitoes up there are like small helicopters. So how much repellent is it required to douse yourself in to keep one of those guys away? Mm-hmm. It's a cool idea. I think the idea of sensing where they are. Now, if they attach a laser to it and zap the mosquito out of the sky, now that would be cool. Probably dangerous as all get out, but that'd be cool.
But feasibility is not a yes no thing. I suppose technically it is yes and no, but it's a lot of questions with yes no answers that need to be combined.
Yeah, and so, some of it is technically, can a person actually carry it if they put it on their body someplace? If it weighs 3.5 tons, it's probably not going to be considered a wearable anywhere. So,
or will it cost $3 million a piece?
Yeah. Now, if it's really, really good, then it's worth it. But there's technical. It's the ability to market it with somebody, say this problem is bad enough, I need to really solve it, and on and on and on. I think my wife would pay for one, because whenever she's wearing like sandals or stuff at dinner, she can't hear or see or feel the mosquitoes that are on her ankles, and she gets regularly bitten there. So having a sensor that would alert her to it, she could at least take action and do something about it. But I think it's a cool idea, and more power to this team and Tessa and her team for coming up with it. Product development is so many different pieces of it. And I know a handful of folks that have, you know, been involved with multiple product launches, multiple product development stuff. But it's finding the right list of questions, which I don't think is written down anywhere. It's because it's so dependent on that particular device that you're coming up with, problem it's trying to solve. But yeah, no, I wish her well and the team well with their project, and I'd be really cool to see one of these that's, you know, in action. How would you know it's working, kind of thing? That might be an interesting problem to solve. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it is just a question that came across my desk this morning, and I thought, oh, this is cool. I got to talk to Chris about this.
It's very cool.
So if you've got some thoughts on this, how would you check the feasibility of something like that? How would you judge it? Or if you've got a cool product and you're wondering if it's feasible or not, or reliable or not, let us know. Those are the kinds of questions we live for. We're available at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, a couple of ways to get in touch with us. And Chris and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch with us. And this one actually came direct email. You know, I'm not shy about sharing my email address out there, and they found it. And I think it was, I don't know where, I didn't ask, but yeah. We can talk about stuff like this. And I gave her an answer or at least my thought on it. I should update it now that I've got a better answer. So thanks for that, Chris. Appreciate it.
No worries.
All right. Well, we're off until our next recording session. And so I hope you have a great rest of your day, Chris. Take care.
You too, Fred. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.